Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe a key ingredient, folks, to scaling up is making certain your execution engine, yes, your execution engine is never turned off. And super excited today to have Nick on the show. Nick is the co-founder and CTO at Tenacity Cloud. He also has a couple of senior positions inside the sort of startup and scale-up world. Prior to that, he has worked across several companies in senior roles, helping them move through the steps to scale up both product and also operationally and achieve their goals. So, you know, super excited, Nick, to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard. Really appreciate you having me.
Awesome. And folk, as always, I like to give you a bird's eye view as to what we are going to be chatting about. And as you know, startup founders out there, you don't need frameworks. You don't need coaches. Words like that, words like agile, maybe frowned upon, right? A startup is ultimately a pure execution and iteration engine, because, you know, in all honesty, processes, org charts, reporting lines, all that stuff is the arteries of an organization. And startups can go from idea to product to market fit in a matter of days or even weeks. Each iteration, guys and girls, can happen in hours. The build, the test, the deployment cycles can actually, honestly, be a few minutes in some instances. Am I right?
Oh,
you know, in all honesty, partially. I'm not here to poo-poo on anyone. I'm not here to say, listen, what I've just said is not accurate, because it is partially, right? We do need to have an execution engine. But the reality is, as you grow, you have to have structures. You have to have structures that come in that allow you to grow. But the structures that you bring in should not hinder your growth. And you should always be able to flex your execution engine, right? And no better person to talk about this with me today than Nick. Nick, so let's get you into the show here. Let's start at the top. And I guess for me, it's as you go through the journey of going from startup to scale up, there's a number of different things that you have to consider, but let's dig down to the product side of things. And what are the steps in your view, in your opinion, that you need to take into consideration as you move your product from that sort of startup world into something that is scaling up, something that is going through Series A, Series B, and actually being plugged into enterprise solutions?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. So I can start just about anywhere on this topic, but I think one of the best places to start, because product is the place where I've lived in my career, whether on the, you know, engineering and operations side of it, or whether on the product leadership side of it, you know, really early on understanding sort of how your product becomes a building block and what are those components, those units that are going to help you scale. Because as, you know, as a product starts to penetrate the market and there's uptick in that product, you know, knowing when your breaking points, where are your thresholds, What does that look like? And how are you going to continue to scale the product, whether it's on the back end or whether it's on the operational end, or even if it's on the experience end, which is, I think, a place where a lot of product managers forget that there's a very different scale for a, you know, mid-scale or mid-size, you know, $50 million revenue company using your product versus a Fortune, you know, 50 company using your product. That's just a very different experience. You have to think about those things.
I like what you're saying there. And you're breaking it down here. Let's dig into this a bit. So we're looking at your components. You mentioned a couple there, your back end, your experience, which is ultimately the knowledge and the know-how. Also the infrastructure, the technical, the software. Where would, you know, if I'm going through the paces and I am looking at the next evolution of my product into enterprise, i.e. I'm selling to maybe Credit Suisse, or I'm selling to UBS, or I'm selling to Goldman Sachs. Is the next layer more an experience layer? I need the know-how from these types of corporates or enterprise in order to then make certain my infrastructure stack is up to grade, or my software is aligned to their needs. Where exactly, I guess, should I think of starting before I fire off?
Yeah. So, you know, this is where I would, well, first I would tell you just moving, if you're moving from like a mid-market to an enterprise, that is a big jump, and it's going to affect all three of those things. So, you know, my advice there to a product manager, to someone who's a founder in building, is you want to scale gently, right? Because it's going to accelerate. It's going to take off. Don't jump from a, you know, mid-market customer that's your core customer immediately trying to sell into the enterprise, because you're going to have to scale. Not only, you know, there's things you're not going to understand about the infrastructure, the engineering, just because you didn't build the product for that audience initially, but there's also operational components. There's just different expectations around support. There's different expectations around training and, you know, the sorts of organizational plumbing that's necessary to sell in those types of customers. Just a very different persona. And yes, then the experience piece is a big one. If your platform is designed to visualize, let's just take an example. So many platforms are visualizing some set of data. And if that set of data you've built it around visualizing, it's responsive for a mid-market customer. I guarantee it's not for an enterprise customer. They're just dealing with a complete different, you know, magnitudinal scale. It is really all three of those.
Yeah. Because I hear you saying, especially I've personally seen this a few times when it comes to, you know, looking at, you got mid-market, maybe you have slightly lower than mid-market clients. And yes, there's always a tendency to think as you scale, you want to, you know, rightfully go after maybe the larger customers. But that operational aspect for me, rightly or wrongly, seems to be underplayed quite a lot of times. So you mentioned support. Training in financial services, also the regulation around that. I know that you have to go through certain InfoSec, you know, licenses in order to be able to actually even be on a list to potentially be a vendor for the likes of Credit Suisse, etc. Right? For me, it's making certain that universe is really, really thoroughly investigated and understood. And then, you know, coming up with, I like what you say, coming up with a pragmatic plan on how to approach that. It's not chucking all eggs in one basket, going, okay, we have to go, you know, go hung and, you know, hire senior executives with X amount of experience in these enterprises. But look at it as a runway, look at it as a path. And, you know, okay, well, this is the path. This is our, you know, 2 or 3 year ambition, and strategically start plotting the path, right? Okay, our tech stack needs to be developed to X, Y, and Z capability. Our operational staff needs to go from this type of person to that type of person, right? Training needs to be encompassed with. We have to get those certifications up and running. Also, we need to make certain that, I know in your world, especially actually in my world as well, you know, all our cyber and security stuff is aligned, right? So there's a lot of, I want to say, there's a lot of thinking to be done, right? Before starting. And I know maybe not everyone wants to hear that, but if you do the thinking, then you're also going to understand the cost around that, right?
That's right. I mean, I had a great mentor in the last organization in which I worked, a serial entrepreneur that I love this because it's so true. Thinking is work too. Yeah. And so do that work. Thinking is work too.
Yeah, exactly. And the more you're able to, you know, plot and think, the less risky it becomes, right? And the more strategic your investment comes. And actually, I guess from both of our, you know, from both our points of view, the more focused the execution comes, and then everything else afterwards, right?
That's correct. I think a mistake that sometimes folks make is they get stuck in analysis paralysis because they're seeking something they can't have, which is certainty. You can never have certainty. What you can have is a reduction in uncertainty. So you start at, you know, very uncertain, and that's usually the moment when you feel the most confident. And as you start to learn more, your confidence wanes, but what you're really doing is actually reducing the uncertainty. And the most important thing you can do when thinking about a problem, you know, the planning phase, the plan's not going to matter at the end of the day. The plan's not really what's important. It's the planning itself that matters, because during that phase, it's not about finding what you're going to say yes to. It's about finding all the other things you're going to say no to and deliberately and intentionally making that decision. And even though that can erode early confidence in what you're doing, focusing and sticking to that path, you actually do reduce uncertainty, and you learn so much faster when building a product or building a company.
Exactly. And we do have to keep the execution engine running, right? We can't just, as you say, we can't go through analysis paralysis or planning for the sake of planning, right? And I know we were chatting offline a couple of weeks ago, and you've been through that process, you know, a few times in your career. You made certain that, you know, that tech stack kept on producing to a high quality, and you kept on iterating, kept on moving forward as the market demanded. And, you know, I'm quite keen to dig into how you are able to keep executing as a business, executing on your product and your features, and also on the operational side of things as your business was scaling.
Yeah. So I think the place to start here, and I can dive into some specifics or some stories there, but I think at the highest level, it's understanding your execution framework. And let's touch a moment on frameworks and processes. Yeah. And you know, this is sometimes those are words sometimes that turn people off. If what you're doing does not achieve the only two goals, there's only two goals of frameworks or process, it's to create clarity and create efficiency. Mm. If it creates roadblocks, it creates gates, it slows things down, that's incorrect. Yeah. That's not the right framework. That's not the right process, right? That's really actually kind of avoidance of doing a task, unfortunately. What you're looking for is clarity and efficiency. So create those two things and be really intentional about it. An execution framework in a startup is making sure that you have a rhythm that's really lightweight, that brings your entire team on board and helps them understand the key metrics of the business. There should be one, maybe two to three that you're watching, but there's one that really drives everything. And that can change, be fluid. It's okay for it to change from month to month or quarter to quarter. And just be sure that everyone understands that goal you're marching towards. We can dive into all the sorts of things that go into that, but that's really, at the end of the day, that's what an execution framework is. It's a set of principles that you all agree to that you're going to march towards, and you measure it, and you have to keep marching towards it. You can't get stuck. So there has to be progress every time you come together, whether that's weekly or daily, et cetera. There has to be progress from the last time you met.
And we talk about execution framework, and specifically from a product point of view, there's a lot of opinions and ideas getting chucked at product managers, at CTOs to do more, to build faster, et cetera. And I guess that's in way part of scaling up. So how do you manage that? I know we talked about execution, right? But what is the stack that you were able to build to make certain that there was control, efficiency, and clarity so that you as a CTO and, you know, and sometimes as a founder was able to continuously build that product along with your team?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the three areas, right? Yeah. So operationally, let's touch on first, because as a leader, as a founder, operationally, you have to get it right. The stack should be fairly simple. First of all, you have to think about the two types of work that people need. There's collaborative work and there's deep focus work, right? And a lot of times founders miss one of those. If they're naturally extroverted, everything's collaborative work. And if they're naturally introverted, everything's deep focus work. But you got to hit both of those. So be intentional about time to build, be intentional about time that you meet, and then be intentional about how you're meeting. For instance, I'm familiar with several different execution frameworks for companies. I don't use any one of them. I take parts and pieces from each of them. So for instance, we use a daily huddle that's, you know, 5 minutes. That's just everybody on the team getting together. And if there are issues that come up, we parking lot those and then we go solve them together. That's great. That's collaborative. It allows people to get into deep focus, but keeps everybody aligned. But then there's also, you know, making sure that we are on a rhythm of every week, keeping the product on track, the roadmap. What have we learned? What have we learned about clients? What have we learned about prospects and customers? What have we learned about how people are using the product? What have we learned about our infrastructure, our engineering, and how it's scaling? Are the things that need to be fixed there? And how do we adjust and iterate? If you keep that on a weekly rhythm, that gives you 52 chances a year to make minor corrections instead of finding out 3 or 4 months from now that something's completely falling apart and now you have a catastrophe, you know, an emergency on your hands. So that's one, that's the operational component.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
The infrastructure component is, you know, you really want to think in terms of non-functional requirements. And non-functional means not how the user's using it, but thinking in terms of where you're going to run into problems and knowing when you are. It's okay to have those limits. It's okay to know I can only process this much data over this much time. And that's just, that's the data flow I can handle. Then we look at opportunities we have. And if we're going to exceed them, we have to go solve that problem. If we're not going to exceed them, leave it alone. It's fine. You've now unitized that work. You know that you can do this much in that data stream, for example, by way of example. Yeah. If you can unitize all of your infrastructure that way, that makes it much easier as a CTO and as a co-founder to think about how you scale the business. Okay, I need 1x of those. Now I need 2x. Now I need 10x. Now I need 100x of those, right? Yeah. And it's much easier to solve scaling problems then. The final piece of that is kind of the experience piece. And this is the part I think that a lot of people struggle with early on. And only really with, we've talked about it for years, but with the advent of product-led growth, it put a extreme focus, the experience, and how are you going to scale by simply having the user use the product and drive its growth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think all those points that you just mentioned are absolutely critical. I think, I don't want to say a silver bullet, but it's vital across all of this that there's complete agreement, understanding, and alignment on the core priorities and when those core priorities and core objectives and when those, what are the priorities and when those objectives will be met. And everyone across the executive team and also the wider team needs to be held account. You can't sort of decide today that we're going to do one thing and tomorrow because there's something going on, change tack, right? That causes disharmony and that causes mistrust. I remember a story a number of years ago. I was on a project at New York Stock Exchange, actually. And New York Stock Exchange at that time, it was about, maybe about 12 years ago, maybe a bit longer. But they were creating their own clearinghouse, right? And it was a difficult time because there's a lot of competition in the market through regulatory upheaval, through the back of the 08 crash. So a lot of competition, a lot of rig change, a lot of uncertainty, right? What didn't help in this instance was the fluctuation of priorities and requirements into the pot, right? And actually, it became counterproductive because, you know, you want to get something live, you want to get live quickly, but because things were always changing, i.e. the requirements and the priorities, the team below, the actual engine room, was not executing. They're looking at one another going, you know, what the hell's going on here? Right. So a bit of, you know, hard-nosed, consulting had to be taken place. And I came in and we, you know, were able to solve the challenge, which is, to your point, which is, you know, having very clear priorities, making certain, you know, the technical architecture, you know, what components in that technical architecture are, you know, sorry, folks, I'm going to say it's red, amber, and green. And you know how to attack the red, amber, green, and when to attack it and what resource to use across that solution architecture, right? And then once you know that and there's clarity, you can start really scaling the product. And this is what happened in this instance. I don't know if you got similar examples.
I do. I absolutely do. Well, first, let me just say that the most important thing you can do as a leader and as a product manager is know your priorities. Honestly, at the end of the day, if you get those right and you forget everything else, if you get hit by a bus, if you got the priorities set right, the team can move forward because they know what 1 through 20 is. They know what to work first. So get those right.
And by the way, I didn't, Nick and I did not, pay Nick anything to say that. We're just in agreements, full agreements.
we are. And this is, it's one of those simple truths that maybe I didn't realize until I was in my mid 30s, but then you suddenly realize that the most important thing in your life is a to-do list. not all the other stuff that I learned. It was the to-do list that actually got things done. You know, I do have examples there of where, and believe me, listen, you know, product managers out there, product leaders, co-founders, et cetera, I've made every one of these mistakes. I've been the one who's taken feedback from a customer and injected it into the pipeline for the engineering team and completely messed everything up. And, you know, that's on me. You have to own that when it happens, right? You have to kind of fall back to your core values and say, you know what? That was a bad idea, guys. That was all my fault. And it's not that they're not delivering, they're not executing. It's that I completely messed up the plan and what they were supposed to be focused on. Been there. I would also say that sometimes there are such gravitational forces in a startup. And I'll give an example of this. There are such gravitational forces that it forces you to step back as a founder or step back as, you know, one of the principals and reevaluate what your priorities are and what you should be doing.
100%.
An example of this, you know, this is 12, 13 years ago, early stage company out in Maryland that we were in the healthcare data analytics space. And we were consuming a massive amount of data from our customers. Our customers were the insurance companies, the payers in the industry. And we had developed this concept, what we called a functional unit. So every time we brought a customer on board, we deployed one functional unit of infrastructure. It was a really well-defined, you know, well-configured set of infrastructure for the customer. And it could do things at a certain rate. And then we started to get contracts that completely blew that concept out of the water. We were executing on this for maybe 2 years. This functional unit was working. And suddenly we had traction inside of the industry with much, much, much bigger customers. And that forced the team to step back and reevaluate what we were doing. And we could have said, well, we'll just make a bigger functional unit. But we paused at that moment, came together as a team and actually rethought the entire problem and started to build some of the early massively parallel processing, massive data warehouse systems before it was kind of a data warehouse in a box. We were having to conceive of those things ourselves just because the traditional systems weren't going to solve the problem. We were not going to be able to load the data, for instance, the time allotted. We were running into simple, you know, calendar issues where we used to be able to load data in 3, 4, 5 days. Pretty soon that extended to 20 days. Suddenly we're at loading data for each month is taking 45 days. Well, if you do the math, that doesn't work because if I'm 15 months into the next month, how can I even, you know, how can I even, I could never catch up. I'll always fall behind. It forced us to rethink the problem. And honestly, that opened the door. That moment in that startup, I was a part of it as at that point running the infrastructure, a team that was building the data centers and building out the hardware platforms. It forced us in that moment to rethink it, but also then created opportunities for new product lines because the way we were rethinking the problem allowed us to do things with much bigger data sets that we just hadn't dreamed of that capability until that gravitational force, you know, forced us to go in another direction.
I love it. And in a way, you got to have your fingers on the pulse, right? You know, you got to know what the market's saying. You got to know what your customers are saying. You can't ignore that. A plan's a plan and a plan needs to be agile, right? But obviously, you need to have your fingers on the pulse. And if there is a case, just as you've mentioned, how did you and the leaders in this instance, how do you take people along the journey of, okay, well, we're here and guys, there's a slight shift here. We need to stop playing rugby instead of American football. How did you guys take the team along the journey?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a couple of important things to remember about managing really smart people, having really talented staff. First of all, don't fall into the trap of leading from the top down and telling them what to do. The best thing you can do as a founder hiring really intelligent folks for you is actually show them the problem and tell them the outcome you desire. Don't box them in. And then in a spirit of productive conflict, debate, have them help you arrive at the actual solution. I mean, that's buy-in right there. When somebody gets to be a part of solving a problem, even if their idea isn't the one that's implemented, the fact that their idea got to be debated and got to be injected into the process of brainstorming brings people along, gets you buy-in. We have a core value in our company, and I borrow this from a previous serial entrepreneur, and it's called Great Ideas Win. And the whole concept there is that the best ideas do not come from myself or my business partner. The best ideas come from people who are all over the company, who are actually interacting with the product, actually interacting with the customers, who really understand these problems at a core level. And what we want is for, if five people enter a room and there's a problem to solve, they're each going to have an idea about how to solve it. So five ideas go on the table. And we debate those and we chew them up. And in that process, what happens is a sixth idea emerges and a seventh and an eighth and a ninth. And pretty soon you land on something that was far better than any of the individual ideas that came into the room. And that's the spirit of Great Ideas Win, is we check our egos at the door. I don't have all the answers. I'm going to have some ideas about how to do it, but we're going to debate those. I know my idea is not going to get implemented. We get to be a part of that conversation. That's number one in bringing people along, is involve them in that process of coming up with the solutions.
Some sage advice there, and some really lofty inspiration, I would say. And I'd say everyone out there, take it. If you don't mind, take that philosophy into your own journeys, because it is. It's about debate. It's about collaboration. It's about teamwork. And it is, in a way, to coin a phrase, teamwork does make the dream work, right? And as we end up on this part of the podcast, what advice do you want to give to product owners out there, product founders out there that are in the midst of, you know, moving their startup out of that startup phase and they're scaling it up? What do you want to say to them to inspire them along their journey, and maybe give a little bit of advice that they can, you know, take on board that will allow them to get to where they need to get to?
I would say, and I've fallen victim to this, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten is beware opportunities, right? The phrase I learned was AFO, another effing opportunity. And the idea here being, you want to stay focused on where you know you're going to win and where you know you're going to scale. And of course, you're looking at opportunities to do better, but you're going to see 1,000 opportunities, and 999 of those are going to distract you from your core mission. And so learning early on and being really aware of, is this actually an opportunity I should be looking at? Or is this something we say no to? It's more important to say no to those and make sure you stay focused on your core mission, because nothing derails you faster than chasing something else that, you know, maybe isn't necessarily going to work, but you don't know that, in place of the thing that is working, that is scaling. You want to not be distracted from that.
Yeah. So again, some great advice. And, you know, now, folks, we go into the flash round. Drum rolls. There we go. My drums. I need to get, if anyone out there and they've got an old drum set and they have nothing to do, they don't want it anymore, drop me a note. I'm looking for one. I want a bit of a tambourine or something like that. A drum roll, proper drum roll. But there we go. My makeshift drum roll means the flash round is upon us. And what is the flash round? Pretty simple stuff here. I ask Nick three questions, three yes or no answers. And then I turn over the mic and give the man of the hour the opportunity to ask me a question. And then after that, we high fives and say goodbye for this episode. So here we go. Nick, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, he's ready. Okay, what's more important as you're scaling up, products or people?
People, always.
People, always. Okay, there we go. What is more important, execution or strategy?
Oh, execution. All day long, eat strategy.
Love it. As we go into 2022, 2023, 2024, as we go into the future, what is the future of scaling? Is it community or is it product?
Oh, it's community, definitely. I mean, product-led growth has already showed us that.
Yeah, nice. Okay, brilliant. So there we go. You heard it from the horse's mouth, as they say. And now I give the mic over to you, my friend, and you can ask me whatever you like.
Well, I'm going to ask you the question that I ask every entrepreneur that I run across. What's the hardest lesson you learned in your journey?
Okay, that's a good one, right? The hardest lesson, the toughest thing that I've had to face, in all honesty, is building a system and a community that leads my growth. That's the toughest thing that I came to realize. And why do I say that, right? You know, over 10 years ago, I started, right, in scale of consulting. And I was doing a lot of one-on-one consulting, i.e. Going into clients and consulting as you normally do as a consultant. And I realized that the model wasn't working. It wasn't working, not because I wasn't growing, because I wasn't having an impact, right? And I flipped the model and I decided that something had to change. I needed to get out there. I needed to have more one-to-many, right? Obviously, the podcast came out, the community came out, and I've developed a system that started leading to growth exponentially. And with me sleeping and my team sleeping, people could, you know, take bite-sized chunks of what we had to offer. And that's sort of sowed the seeds. But that was a tough lesson, and it didn't it took me a few strikes to swallow the pill and then take the right pill. But as they say, right, you learn on the job. There's no better place to learn on the job. And in all honesty, quite proud of what we've had to achieve, because we've also bootstrapped, and we've done it by reinvesting as entrepreneurs back into the business from, you know, the wins that we've had. So yeah, that's the biggest lesson I've learned. Develop that business development engine alongside whatever it is you're creating, whether it's a service or a product. Do it in parallel and do it from the beginning, and great things happen.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's really good advice. It is hard. I think I just want to comment on the term community. Yeah. Is I think so many organizations are trying to find and build their community, but they see it as only something they can take from. And to really have a community, you have to give it more than you take from it. So if you want to build it from a business development perspective, you have to give it a lot. And clearly, obviously, you're doing that. I mean, here we are. You're doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And it is. It's all about value. And like, listen, we're here today chatting about some hardcore stuff when it comes to your product. And that's what it's about. Giving people a little bit of value. When I say a little bit, it might actually be a lot, but giving them that 1% that allows them to achieve something. And then listen, if it leads to a partnership or collaboration, it doesn't matter, right? As long as someone out there is getting something out of this. And, you know, I love it. So I think you and I are of the same ilk. And, you know, awesome, Nick, to have you on the show today. And I always say to guests, how can folk out there get in touch if they want to get in touch with you and the team?
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me, Richard. Really appreciate being on the show. Really easy to find us, tenacitycloud.com. /merch, get a cool shirt, get a cool hat. If I see you out there in the world and you're wearing it, I'm going to stop and talk to you, because I want to learn and meet all the people that I can in the world. So go out and find us.
Awesome. And I'm going to be cheeky and ask if I can get one of those.
Of course.
You know, there we go. Okay. Yes, I think I need a bit of merch, and would love to promote you guys, because you and the team are doing some great stuff, and looking forward to seeing you guys scaling up in the years to come.
Okay. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.